Hi, and welcome to the QuitCast for Writers. This is the show that helps you know what to quit, what to keep, and what to question. My name is Becca Syme, and I am a success coach for authors with thousands of hours in coaching some of the most successful people in this industry. My goal in this podcast is to help you understand why you're not having success if you aren't, and how to double down on the success you're already having. Anyone can tell you what worked for them, and they can say it might not work for you, but they can't tell you why. I can tell you why. Welcome to the QuitCast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the QuitCast. Because this particular video is the first in our burnout recovery series, and it is about how did we get here? This is specifically for people who are in burnout currently or who are coming out of burnout, who need the help to get back onto the road or to get out of the pit as we talk about it. So the assumption is either that when you're watching this, you are learning for the future or to help your friends, which is awesome, or that you are either in burnout or recovering from burnout currently, in which case my heart goes out to you. I'm in that place as well. It's the reason that the announcement video that we did about the fact that this series was coming is because I have still been in the middle of burnout. It's significantly better now, but additionally, it's significantly better because I've been on the road to recovery. And I did a few things, which I've done before, and I talk about them a little bit in the burnout book, but we're going to go into more depth because what I'm eventually hoping to do is to re-release the burnout book as an updated version and add a whole section on recovery. Because of course, the reason I wrote it years ago was because I was watching it coming sort of nationally, internationally with us as an industry, watching it coming, knowing we were going to need to know how to assess and figure out where I'm at and why this is happening. But specifically, I wasn't thinking a ton about recovery because, of course, it had been a while since I had been in burnout recovery, and it had been a longer time since I had been in major burnout recovery. And so I want to talk about the recovery process in these videos. We're going to outline a few of the steps and then talk one at a time through what to do in each of the processes. So the reason this video is entitled, How Did We Get Here? Is because it is so important at the very beginning of burnout recovery or at some point as you're recovering, because some of you will be coming across this video later than the beginning of your recovery. But it's so important to identify the reasons that brought us here. How did this happen? Not why in an existential way of like, you know, why are we here on earth? Those kinds of questions are not the practical type of questions that I'm looking for. So there absolutely are people who talk about that more existential style of burnout. And I even talk about it a little bit in my own book, but the purpose here is to talk about how did this happen? Because the important piece of identifying where you are in the recovery process in terms of how close to the bottom of the pit am I, is to talk about whether or not the factors that caused it are still present. Because the more present the factors that cause the burnout are, or the systems, because we'll talk about that, the more likely it is that I am going to be in either a long recovery or recovery hasn't really started yet. I'm just cycling in and out of burnout at the very bottom of the pit, and that is possible. So how did I get here is important for a couple of reasons. The first one is many of us are not aware when we're in recovery that the process can be backwards and forwards. We think, oh, the burnout's over. It was just an energy thing. So we're thinking of energy in terms of gas. So if I just refill the gas tank, then it should be fine and I should be able to run again, which in a lot of different the three different types of burnout that I identify in the book, that's not total burnout. Each one of those does have a well that you can sort of fill that will help to stave off it happening. But when the burnout happened for reasons that we'll illustrate in this video, it is more difficult to recover if you haven't solved the source of the problem. It's more like having a hole in the bottom of the
of the bank, of the tank, so that any energy you make is just siphoning right back out again. And so it's super important to identify what the factors were that drove you to this place. And I'm going to talk about something called the Bermuda Triangle, which some of you who have been listening to these videos for 4 years know that this is not a common for me to talk about. I've talked about it before, but I'm going to put a slightly different spin on the Bermuda Triangle today because I want to talk about why the stakes are important. S-T-A-K-E-S, not S-T-E-A-K-S, although I do love steak, S-T-E-A-K, but stakes, S-T-A-K-E-S, are important when we talk about Bermuda Triangle issues in relationship to burnout, because the stakes are usually what cause the energy depletion to happen. So either the not refilling or the overworking or the overpushing or overexerting. So let's talk about the Bermuda Triangle. So there's three points on the Bermuda Triangle. And when we're talking about stakes, which if you're a writer, you know, when you have something at stake, you have something to lose. So people are always talking in story analysis or in education relating to plots about a character having something at stake. They need to have something to lose. And the reason from a story perspective that that's important is because stakes determine what's going to happen. If you don't have enough at stake, you don't want the outcome enough that's painful. And so you're not going to go through the painful black moment in order to get to it because you'll just walk away from it. You don't want it that bad. But when the stakes are high, when I have something to lose, when I want something enough, or when I need something enough, then I will absolutely do whatever it takes to get that thing or to make that happen. So when the stakes are high and I have something to lose, that means that I all of a sudden have motivation. So that's important to understand first, the stakes, because each one of the three points of the Bermuda Triangle is going to have a stake attached to it for you when we talk about how did I get here. And that is really important to watch out for. So when we do these assessments with clients, what I do is we sit down and we outline, when did I start to either see this coming, or when did other people see this coming, and what was going on during that time? So often what we hear is that there's some kind of a change in stakes, right? All of a sudden I realized I could do this full time. All of a sudden I realized I don't have a job anymore. All of a sudden I realized, right? Like there's this, we have some people whose stakes rise when they turn 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 or 90, because they're like, my life is running out and I need to get this done. And so they're afraid of missing out. Again, we're going to talk about FOMO, or the fear of missing out, a little bit in this series as well, because that drives an awful lot of the stakes to happen. So the stakes will raise and all of a sudden it'll feel like I have to do this or this needs to happen. And that can happen for various reasons. So understanding where the stakes are coming from is important, because in burnout recovery, if the stakes are just one point on the triangle, so if you don't have competing stakes, which we'll talk about, but if it's just one, then there are other places to go to get relief from the burn or from the churn or whatever it is. There are other places to go to get relief. If you don't have an ability to deconstruct the stakes, so I'm not able to do anything else other than this right now because of a disability. I'm not able to do anything else than this right now because the stories won't let me do anything else and I lose myself in other jobs, whatever it is, right? Like there's some reason, there's a time sensitive reason, and then there are stakes that are attached, and that creates motivation to expend energy. So when it's just one, that's just a very hard push and it is a lot of energy to do that thing, it can absolutely be sustainable until an opposing stake happens. So it's when the opposing stake comes into play that we get tension and difficulty. And if any of you have ever heard of dilemma plotting, or you understand the function of dilemma and story, you will have a natural understanding. And most writers do have a natural understanding of how great dilemma is to create drama. Because when you have a dilemma, so my wife will die if I don't, my best friend will die if I don't. And the two things that need to happen in this situation are opposite of each other. So my wife will die if I don't give in to the drug lords. My best friend will die if I give in to the drug lords. So you have those opposing stakes and you create tension between those two. And then what happens is the tension is this dramatic, it's a dramatic tension, because if I move too far in one direction or the other, I risk eliminating one side of those stakes. And it's very important to me that both of those people stay alive. And if you know anything about dramatic tension, right, and dilemma plotting as a way to increase dramatic tension, I took a class on this a while ago, and I'll try to find the link to it and put it in the show notes. The guy was fantastic in terms of like story discussion. We're not talking about burnout stuff in that class, but his teaching of dilemma as a method of story construction was fascinating. We basically looked at the movie Training Day and mapped all of this dramatic tension that happened, because what happens when you have those two competing stakes is you bounce back and forth in either direction. So it'll be like, for a while I choose this, but then they threaten my friend. And for a while I choose my friend, and then they threaten my wife. And for a while, and then I realize, and for a while, and then I realize. And the problem is, when the stakes are equal and opposite, all you will ever do is go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth all the time until the stakes get solved. So the reason that this is so important when we talk about the Bermuda Triangle is because specifically when you have competing stakes that are causing burnout, especially if you have three, and like I said, we'll talk about that in a second, though you have competing stakes that are causing burnout, then you are going to get caught in a lot of activity that is not productive. So you're going to spend a lot of time doing things that don't move the needle, because you're being active in a dramatic way. You're moving only a little bit in this direction, because as soon as you move a little in that direction, you have to balance it back out, or else you're risking losing this thing. Many of us who have children and a job, many of us who have a spouse and a job, many of us who have a very demanding boss and also a, you know what I mean? Like there's always I have this that requires my full attention and this that requires my full attention. And I'm constantly bouncing back and forth between them, because if I let one go for too long, then there are stakes attached. And again, and we'll talk about this in later videos, but sometimes the stakes attached are false stakes and we don't know it. So it's important to be able to deconstruct those when they are. But when you have this bouncing back and forth between these two dilemma points, it's often much easier to balance them, because you'll do, I work really hard at my job and then I come home and work on my writing. Then I work really hard at my job and I come home and work on my writing. And there's this feeling of, I have enough bandwidth to be able to balance both of those things at the same time. Or the dramatic tension doesn't reach a climax because I just continue to not choose between those two competing priorities. When we add, and the family and job is a bad example, because you can have both of those and have and have a productive life, but none of us just want those two things. And so often what ends up happening in burnout is that we keep adding things to the pile that cannot get dropped, or life keeps adding things to our pile that cannot get dropped. And then we're constantly juggling all of this stuff. And all it takes to have a total burnout happen is for one ball to drop. And that's often what happens. We get sick, someone else gets sick, we move across the country, the pandemic happens, whatever it is, like all it takes is one ball to drop, and then everything falls on its face and we end up in burnout. So the downside of this is that if we treat all of the stakes as completely equal, if we don't allow ourselves the freedom to deconstruct any of the stakes at all, then we're going to be caught in this unproductive circle essentially for forever. Because when we're talking about the stakes that we attach to things that motivate us, we're often using those stakes as a way to make ourselves feel content, grateful, or happy, or secure, right? So like joyful, grateful, secure, content, all of those positive emotions, we use the juggling as a way to convince ourselves that when I finally can hit mastery on these places, that everything will be okay. I'll feel great. Once I can finish this, I'll feel great, et cetera. And so we have this withholding of true contentment or of joy or of security or of gratitude until we have resolved all of these stakes. Because that's what dramatic tension looks like, right? That's the reason we watch movies where there is dilemma inherently in it, is we get attached to the character. Like Training Day is a great example. You get attached to the character, and then suddenly when he gets put in this dilemma, you can't stop watching because you care about what he cares about and you need to know what he chooses. And we don't always have the perspective. In fact, we rarely have the perspective on our own lives to see that this is where we're getting caught. We're getting caught between all of these competing stakes. And because we don't either deconstruct any of them or recognize what's happening, then we're just continuing to juggle and juggle and juggle and juggle until something gets dropped and then we go into burnout. The problem is when we are in burnout, if we still haven't really addressed the stakes of everything that's happening in the juggling, then we're never going to really recover, not to the point where we would be back to 100%. Because there is, of course, those of you who've read recently about like pandemic fatigue and things like that, where your vigilance goes up and down based on, you know, what your expectations of the external world are, because you can't maintain vigilance solid for 3 years in a row. Like, it's not possible to do that. So you reach these fatigue points where your vigilance is too much, but you have to continue living, right? So you are still living, but you're living in a shadow. It's not the same as being recovered. You're just surviving at that point. So our survival instincts kick in and they lower our capacity to really connect with everything. And then more brilliant people have talked about this. Don't listen to me talk about it. But the reason that I compare that is because a lot of us who are in burnout, where we hit that bottom of the pit and then we have to recover, if we don't deconstruct some of the stakes or understand what got us here and acknowledge whether or not we need to go through some essential pain, which we'll talk about in a second, then we are never going to get to the place where we can truly deconstruct the stakes of what had happened and not continue to just cycle back into burnout over and over. And in which case we never, ever hit 100% fully recovered. We just continue to cycle back into burnout because we're not addressing the stakes. So the reason I talked about the dilemma is because you needed to see and feel and hear the tension between those two things. I have a limited capacity. I am not limitless or unlimited. There's a book, and I'm going to talk more about this on the Patreon, hopefully this month. I'm not very far into it yet. I've only read part of the first chapter, but I think this book might be the most seminal book. I'm trying not to overhype it because I don't know for sure that it will be, but just based on the first chapter alone and the level of systemic insight that the author has, I am just pretty convinced that this is going to be a seminal book for an awful lot of us. And it's something that had actually been suggested to me by a few of the people on the Patreon who had heard of it for similar reasons. It's the, anyway, I won't talk about it very much because I'm going to talk more about it on the Patreon. And like I said, I'm so not very far into it, but it's called 4,000 Weeks. And if you haven't read this, he talks about something in that first chapter that we talk about constantly in the BFA, although he doesn't call it essential pain, but it's essential pain. It's the knowledge that the way we want reality to be and the way reality is are not the same thing. And when we're driving along, right? I know I always do the Tommy Boy reference. I can't help it. But we're driving along in our fantasy world about what reality is like or should be like. And then we bump up against reality. reality can't change. It's not going anywhere. Like the reality of the fact that you only have a limited amount of time or capacity or energy. You only have a limited amount of attention. You only have a limited amount of recoverability, of health, of resources. That reality is not going away, no matter how much you wish that it would, and no matter how much you picture in your head that it's not really there. Reality is real. I feel like I shouldn't have to say this. And again, I'm not downplaying positivity or futuristic or any of those things that are strengths, the Clifton strengths that we talk about so often. I'm not downplaying any of those capacities to say that somehow positivity, people shouldn't hope for things or whatever. That is not what I'm saying. What I am saying is when that particular inability to handle reality, which is a basement, by the way, of positivity, not a balcony, basement of futuristic or ideation, not a balcony. My inability to handle when reality happens because I want it to be better than it is often what produces some of this cycle, or the inability to acknowledge that there is a limit to something, even if I'm going to see the limit as an upside. Because of course, what I would say is the limit is an upside. And he says this so brilliantly in the first chapter that honestly, I am tempted to stop reading just because I feel like the most brilliant thing has already been said. Because it was so profound when I heard it. I was like, yes, we say this all the time in coaching, but in different language. And like I said, I'll talk about it on the Patreon. I don't want to get too much into the book on this video, because the point of that, the point of my bringing it up is that limitations exist. Period. Part of the hard, essential pain of life, where I'm driving along and then my desire or need or want or belief about what is true or possible hits up against reality. And that hurts, right? It hurts when I want to use an example from childhood, when I want to have cookies for dinner and my mom knows that I can't have cookies for dinner. So she says, no, right? That's painful because I wanted that thing and now I can't have that. And so that essential pain happens. No, I can't do this, or ouch, or burnout, or whatever it is, that limitation is so frustrating that we often don't deal with it. And this is why I always start my books and my classes and my lectures with the bad news, because I want to get the bad news out of the way and say, okay, great. This is the reality of what we're dealing with here. We have limitations. And again, I just can't say enough about the first chapter of this book. I love the way he says limit embracing, because so many of us are limit averse. I don't think he quite uses that exact language, but that's the way that I heard it, because that's the language that we use, limit averse, or like, we don't like when things don't work out the way we want. We don't like when our will is not gratified, which is a very common way for humans to think, right? Like, why can't I have cookies? I want cookies. I should be able to have cookies. But the expectation that there should be no limit makes us reject the fact that there is a limitation, and then dealing with it makes us not deal with the reality that there is a limitation. So then when we get into burnout, we do things like, okay, I'm just going to read for a month so I can go back to my crazy level of production that I was at before, and then hope that I'll never burn out again. Well, what did you change? Like, what stakes are different now? What did you change? If you didn't change anything, then yeah, you're going to end up back here again. Like, you're going to end up back in the same place again. And that is the hard truth, or the bad news of reality, is that there are limitations. There is a limit, because my free will only extends as far as either the limitations of reality, physics, the limitations of biology, or the limitations of someone else comes up against me. So the reason that I can't just have a cookie for dinner every night, or the reason my parents say don't have cookies for dinner to train me to not gratify that urge, is because they know that that's not going to be healthy for me in the long term, and they want me to have better patterns, right? So the reason the limitations exist is sometimes to benefit us or to help us. And if we don't acknowledge that, and all we do is fight against the limitations all the time, like somehow there's some big mean parent in the sky who's trying to keep us from having what we want. No, there are 7.5 billion people on the planet who all also have free will, who all also have needs, who all also have lives and expectations and dreams and fantasies and desires and weaknesses and strengths, who also have to live here with the rest of us in this place that is a limited place. It has gravitational force. It has limited resource. It is bound by time, right? Like, there are limits to what can be accomplished because everything is essentially limited by nature. Like, and some of you are going to argue with me because you're into growth mindset. I get that. What I'm not saying is you shouldn't believe things could change, or you shouldn't believe that there's expandability, or you shouldn't believe whatever you want to believe about increase, or although maybe I am saying that. We'll see what happens when I finish 4,000 weeks, because I actually believe that the most damaging thing we can do is set ourselves up for expectations that cannot be accomplish. You cannot meet those expectations. Not because some of us don't need higher expectations, because some of us do, right? We talked about that in the planning videos on the Patreon. Some of us need higher expectations so that we'll shoot for what we want. In those cases, we will not be disappointed by not getting those higher expectations because we don't actually really believe that we can hit them. On some level, we know that we're just shooting as high as we can and we want to go farther than we thought we could. And that's awesome. But I may actually be saying more about limits than I think, because like I said, the language that he uses about limitation is something that we talk about a lot in Bounded Sets and Essential Pain. Like, the language that we use is slightly different. But I really love the way he frames it. And I'm going to release the post on the Patreon, stop talking about it, because I'm here to talk about how did we get here. So when we have competing stakes, things that we want that are opposite of each other, that reality has taught us they can't both exist together fully the way we want, that's often more solvable because we will just give and take back and forth. And it doesn't ever give us fully what we want, but most of us have learned how to have contentment, gratitude, security, hope, all those things in the midst of that kind of volleying or jockeying of dilemma. But when you are truly caught inside of a dilemma that you can't choose between, or you can't have what you want, and you are still holding on to those expectations that you should, it creates all of your actions, because expectations naturally produce action. They're what motivates you, right? So when I hold myself to these two things and they have to, my wife cannot die, my best friend cannot die, but there is another force that is trying to force me to choose. And that force doesn't always have a will. And this is where I think we lose the perspective by being inside of our own life. So if I'm Ethan Hawke in Training Day, I don't necessarily know the motivations of the people who are making the decisions that are affecting my dilemma. All I know is from the inside, it looks like I can't make a choice. I don't have any leeway to choose, which is, again, why we encourage perspective, relationships, coaching, therapy, things like that, because we do think it's important to get perspective, because perspective often reveals stakes. But when you're just living inside that and you're constantly choosing between this dilemma, it saps your energy. It makes it really difficult to continue making progress because you're going back and forth all the time and you're never having that sort of progress. And again, this is not about doing more than one thing. It's not about having multiple goals. This is not a talk about focus. This is a talk about essential pain. So the essential pain of reality is not changing. I have a finite capacity. I have limited resources. I only have so much time, but I want, so that's the reality, but I want driving along, right? I want this. I can't choose. All of a sudden, the reality is you only have so much capacity. And once you reach the end of that capacity, you're going to burn out. So the Bermuda Triangle part of this dilemma is most of us have a higher capacity to juggle back and forth when the competing interest, so the things that want the exact same resource that you have, time, money, creativity, when the two things want the exact same resource, we have a much easier time balancing between those two because we sort of siphon, right? It's like this gets some and then we siphon off and this closes and then we siphon off and this closes and we kind of do this with our dilemma of I want to be a full-time author, but I have a full-time job. So I fit in time, work, and that's how I do it. But when I create a Bermuda Triangle where I now have a third competing motivation, like I have a limited resource of time and I can only divide the time in so many pieces. And I have my family who usually leaves the house and is now at home all the time because of the pandemic. And I have no capacity to shut them off because they all have needs all the time. And all of a sudden I don't have the capacity to juggle all of the things that need to get juggled because something changed and the stakes changed and the dilemma changed. So I go from having two to now having three. And this might be the combination of, I already am very driven and the market is very difficult, but I can often manage those two things. But then you add the unpredictability of how much the market has expanded or something changes in a marketplace or your own capacity changes, like you get physically burned out or physically ill or something, and you don't have all the resources you used to be able to devote to things. And people get so frustrated by this because, of course, they don't like the reality. They don't like the essential pain, which I understand. And we should be frustrated about that. But when we continue to operate as though reality doesn't exist, that's often when we get into burnout or when we have systemic issues that we're not addressing that push us into burnout. A huge part of the reason that I burned out this year was because of my health choices that I made, because I just decided that I wanted to be a kid again. And I didn't want to have to force myself to eat like a healthy adult. And not everybody does this. Not everyone is wired the same as me. Not everyone would have this issue. But for me, I know that I can continue to do siphoning back and forth of my energy when the energy remains the same. And as soon as I add something that drains all that energy off, because I'm now eating things that make my body not feel good and not produce the kind of energy that it could, then now I've added in a choice that is completely wrecking everything. And then all the balls fall down. And so I have to then choose, how am I going to rebuild this? Because getting back to a place where we are not burned out anymore does require more than just the identification of how do we get here. But the identification is such an important first step because it is the thing that requires us to address the reality that got us to the burnout in the first place. And then to make sure that we are changing things in a way that allow us to not burn out again. So if I am, and the reason that this is so hard is because so often the stakes that involve other people, so my family all of a sudden being home from the pandemic, none of them chose that. None of us like this. No one's excited about the pandemic. And so all of us are struggling and frustrated in the household where we're all home together and all of our routines got disrupted. And then all of a sudden it's changed my fundamental ability to exist in homeostasis in my environment. And when I can't do that and I have to find a new normal, that means that other things in the system have to change. And if I don't compensate for that by allowing other things in the system to change, if I continue to hold the stakes in the same place that they were when that third stake was added that changed everything, then all of a sudden I'm on the road to burnout, right? And so when we can't change the fact maybe that your family's all home, although several of you have changed that, when I can't change the fact that I have to do this day job, although some of you have changed that, when I can't change the fact that the market works the way it does, or I can only write as fast as I can write, or whatever it is that I have to accept the essential pain of, then I do have to change the expectation that's attached to that state. And this is why I start off with, how did we get here? Because some of us have expectations that are raising the stakes for us, that create these Bermuda Triangle effects that make it so we can't progress, we can't move forward, because the stakes are so high in these different places. It's one of the reasons that I encourage you regularly in this place to go get coaching about this, regardless of who you get coaching from. After reading the beginning of this 4,000 Weeks book, I am potentially going to change the way that I encourage people to get perspective, because I think part of my burnout sounds like it is very similar to part of his burnout, which is very fascinating, because and several of you who've read this are in very similar places, where a lot of us are super obsessed with productivity. And we're always trying to figure out, how do I get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more productive? And we never, ever question the premise of whether or not that's a good attitude to have. And that's kind of what he's doing in this book, is questioning the premise of that productivity obsession. And I'm really not going to talk any more about this book, I promise. But what I love is that the question, the premise attitude of it, because I do think that if we don't get perspective about what drives us into those places, and if we don't find a way to have security, contentment, happiness, joy, and hope in places other than this fantasy land of ultimate productivity that we have out for ourselves in the future, and this fantasy land of the future where we never have any limitations, never have to say no to anything, never don't get what we want, never get disappointed, and never have to experience pain, it's going to be dangerous for us in the future if we don't confront that reality and accept it and then learn how to deal with it. Because again, positivity it's not super, super high for me, but where I do find it is in the place of, okay, great. All right. This is the reality. Now, how do I make this the best reality that I possibly can? Because of course, it's going to try to figure out the best. But when the best is a fantasy, then you're not actually creating progress. When the best is a fantasy, you're creating Bermuda Triangles over and over and over and over and over and over again. So when your system falls apart and you go into burnout, it is a really good time to assess, is this desire based in any reality? Is this based in something that I can actually just choose to become content with? Can I accept the essential pain of the situation that I'm in and adjust to that essential pain instead of continuing to burn out over and over and over again? And I'll talk a little bit more about this from my own perspective when I get farther into the process of the burnout recovery videos, because this is just the very first step. This is just looking at the systemic issues that got me here, looking at the relational issues, the high stakes, the financial issues, looking at the things that are causing this to happen. And if any of you are resonating super hardcore with this, please read 4,000 Weeks with me. I'm going to give my thoughts on the Patreon, because I do think that the discussion of this book is going to be really important for people who are, like a lot of us who are attracted to this platform, who are sort of obsessed with productivity and obsessed with getting more and more and more out of life. And obsessed with that contentment lies in the next and the next and the next and the next. And I'm not talking about achiever goalpost moving. I am not talking about futuristic celebrating 6 months ahead. I'm literally talking about the inability to find contentment or joy or peace or security in anything that has to do with where we are that doesn't have stakes attached to it. And so it is super, super important when we're starting the process of recovery seriously to look at what got us here and look at whether if we go back to that, if it's just going to happen over and over again. Because a lot of people will say things like, well, you know, I could release 12 books a year if I didn't have kids, or I could release 12 books a year if I didn't have an election, or I could release 12 books a year if I didn't have blah, 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 whatever it is. But that if is holding you onto a hope that is making you reach for something that you don't have, making you reach for trying to get rid of something you can't get rid of, or trying to change something you can't and don't want to change. Like, no one seriously wants to get rid of their children so that they can release 12 books a year. I've literally never met anyone who would actually want to do that. It's possible there are people out there like that, and I just haven't met them yet, but I haven't seen it yet. And I've coached almost 5,500 people. So I haven't seen it, but it's possible. There definitely are upsides to some of the limitations that we have. And that's part of why I want us to think about what got us here. What are the upsides of the limitations that we have? And some of that requires objectivity. It requires perspective. Some of it requires you to talk to someone who has no investment in what the stakes are that are attached to what you have and has no investment in whether or not you get what you need in terms of like, I'm not married to you. So whether you make the money doesn't matter to me. Your health matters more to me. So I can ask questions like, do you really need to make $250,000 a year in order to be happy? Do you really need that? Could you make less? Could you have a smaller house? Could you have less gadgets? Could you travel less? And some of you don't think you can, and that's fine, but I don't have a stake in whether you do or not. So I can at least ask the question. I can question the premise, right? And that's what that objectivity provides. So what we're looking for when we assess what got us here is to specifically look for the things that have stakes attached, where my motivation lies, and when there are competing motivations, when things are, I want this, but I want that, but I want this, but I want that, but I want this. That's what we're looking for more often than not. Because once you lock into that Bermuda Triangle, that is the place where productivity goes to die, because there is no way to make progress when everything is competing so much for the exact same resource. There will be no progress. And all it will be is fear of missing out over and over and over again. And so many of us are getting into our burnout places because we are so consumed with the fear of missing out. The fear is driving us to do literally everything. I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. I'm afraid if I don't release the books that they'll never get released. I'm afraid if I don't release now, I'll miss out on the gold rush. I'm afraid if I don't do this, I'm afraid Facebook will change. I'm afraid Amazon will change. I'm afraid, right? So when you hear yourself making a lot of decisions out of fear, it's really important to have a way to deconstruct that. And you can't always do that with yourself or with your spouse. If you can, that's great. Please do. If you can't, find a friend, find a therapist, find a coach who has your best interest at heart, but who doesn't balk at questioning the premise when you say, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. Because what you'll say is, I can't afford that, but can't you? So let's go through and make sure that you can't. I can't not do that, but can't you? I can't do this, but can't you? And not in a petulant, angry way, like, oh, you're just being a baby. That's not what I mean at all. I mean, let's actually look at it. Let's not make assumptions about what we can and can't do. Let's actually look at whether we can deconstruct some of these stakes and help ourselves to recover permanently from this burnout. Because that is definitely my goal. And again, the more I read of this book, the more I'm convinced that the changes I've already made are not going to be the only changes. And we'll talk more about that in future videos. But for right now, your homework is write down the competing stakes, the things that are competing for resources that you have and how highly they are competing for them. Just write them all down. I want you to physically see them. Because so often when we coach people, we walk them through the process of writing all that down. They don't write it down. They just tell us. And the self-awareness that comes when they recognize, oh, I have six things all competing for the exact same 5 hours of my time. That is not possible. I either have to work out a way where I can only do one of them each day throughout the week with those 5 hours, or where I can actually let go of some of them or change my priorities or accept the limitations or whatever it is, right? So we're going to talk more about this both on the Patreon and also in future videos. The resilience that I feel now after doing some of this assessment, I want everyone to feel this because I feel like, okay, I'm excited again, and we're going to nail this. We're going to kill it. Even if we don't do it in the way that I thought we would, even if things are different, I'm excited for the future. And I'm happy you were all here. I'm not happy, of course, that we all have to go through burnout. It does make me sad that that happens. Because I don't like it either, but also I'm happy that you're here with us. If you need help and you cannot figure out what to do, just reach out to us, send us an email through the website, betterfasteracademy.com, go to the Patreon, patreon.com/BeccaSime. And we want to help you with this. We want to help figure out if you need help, but you may not need us. You may have other avenues. And if you do, that's great. You don't need us. That's fine. I just want you to get the help that you need. And we are here if you need us, but if you don't need us, I will be back next week. Hopefully next week, hopefully I can keep this up. We'll see how the burnout recovery goes. So I'm super excited about this. I'm so glad you were here. I hope all of you have a very restful and joyful and contented week. And I will see you next time on the Quick Cast. Bye everybody.